Welcome to the Artist Mother Podcast, featuring interviews with incredible working artists who are also mothers and compelling conversations regarding parenting and the art world. These conversations create a space for inclusivity and support for artist mothers worldwide. I'm Kaylin Butine, painter, mom of three, and podcast host. I'm so grateful you are tuning in, and I hope you enjoy this episode.
I realized at a certain point, like, that it wasn't something I wanted to give up. Because also by that time, I realized, like, it's not so easy to kind of achieve the kind of commercial success I had hoped for. And I thought, you know, there's no guarantee on that, whether or not I have kids. So I don't want to pass up on having kids, which is, you know, I knew would just be a really rewarding, like, rich experience. I didn't want to pass up on that for an art career that might never really turn into the thing I had always wanted it to be.
Amy Lincoln is a New York-based artist who makes imaginative, intensely hued paintings of the natural world. She's had solo shows at the Morgan Lehman Gallery in New York, the Monia Rowe Gallery in St. Augustine, Florida, and online with London-based Tamor Grain Projects. And she currently has a solo show on view at Sperone Westwater Gallery in New York City. Amy lives and works in Queens, New York City with her husband and two young children. And I can't wait to have this conversation about building a solo show. Amy, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks so much. Yeah, yes. Thanks for having me on. I'm excited to talk with you.
Of course. And, you know, we talked a little bit last fall when you were part of our virtual retreat program?
I think it was in June.
Oh, last spring. Yeah, this is the fall. Sorry. The first time we did a virtual retreat, it was in October of 2020. And then we did one this past spring in June. You're right. So yeah. And it was like such, I got so much great feedback about the artist talk. I was like, we need to have her on the bigger podcast that kind of everyone can hear about your work.
Nice. Yeah, it was fun to talk about my career kind of with, like, motherhood as a backdrop, I guess. Like, just in the context of, like, artist mother life.
Yes.
I'd given a talk on that, like with that sort of coloring it before. So it was really fun for me to kind of think about how those two aspects of my life kind of dovetailed over the last, you know, I mean, really more than 7 years, but
right.
7 years.
Yeah. So you have a 7-year-old and then a younger kiddo, right?
Yes. I've got two girls, a 7-year-old and a 3-year-old.
Okay. And you live in Queens, which is, you know, the greater New York City area.
Yes.
Cool.
Yes.
Okay, Amy, let's dig in to talk about your work. I always kind of start with this question about connecting your life as an artist today to something in childhood. I'm wondering if anything comes up for you sort of in, you know, that conversation about, like, how you were raised and if you were, like, exposed to arts or if it was something that you felt was kind of just naturally a part of you. You know, just wondering if you've always wanted to be an artist.
Yeah, I mean, so my parents were both really into music, but also my mom always kind of bought art, you know, like affordable things, like prints and paintings. And, you know, they were definitely really into culture and everybody played music in my family, my dad and my mom, although they divorced when I was pretty young, but, and then my older brother, was also a really good musician. And, I really looked up to him, and he also drew a lot, and he was really good at drawing. And he kind of got to middle school and stopped drawing, and I was 6 at the time, and I remember thinking, like, I'm never going to stop, because I was sort of sad to see that he stopped.
Yeah,
because I loved what he did. And so I was sort of, like, you know, promised myself at that point that I wouldn't stop. And, And I didn't. I definitely kept going with it.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Were you raised outside of New York, or is that somewhere you moved kind of as you were older?
Oh, yeah. I grew up mostly in Oregon.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And my dad lived in California, so I kind of went to visit him some of the time. But mostly I was in suburbs of Portland, Oregon. And okay. I moved to New York after grad school.
Okay, cool. I did not know about that connection. And now kind of knowing that you were raised out west and specifically in that area, I can see kind of the connection to that landscape in your work for sure.
Yeah. I think it's definitely in there. I've always had kind of an interest in nature, and mm-hmm. I think there's a connection there for sure.
Not that New York is not a beautiful and very nature connected state, you know, living in New York City.
Certainly less so.
Yes. Yeah. Okay, Amy. So speaking of your work, can you describe what your work looks like? Maybe in case somebody listening has never, you know, seen it before, and just in the context of this conversation, like I always love having artists sort of describe what their work looks like. And you can talk a little bit about you know, some of the mediums that you work with and the materials that you use.
Sure. So my current body of work are seascapes. They are kind of simplified, and they're really a lot about color. They're not very realistic. They're always kind of just from my head. Mm-hmm. And they have, they're like sort of usually about two-thirds sky, and there'll be either a sun or a moon or stars or clouds. And the imagery is sort of more like a symbol, it's not super realistically depicted. And there's often kind of like a gradation of color coming mm-hmm. out from, you know, the sun or the moon. I'm really into these kind of gradual transitions from one color to another. So yes. That often is kind of the starting point for a painting is color.
I love that. And you know, I know this because you shared sort of such a good kind of visual trajectory about your work in that artist talk for our virtual retreat, but like, could you maybe describe some ways that your work has changed over the past, 10 years or so that you've been working? I know from my perspective, it looked like there was quite a bit of a paring down or like a simplification within the imagery. Would you say that that is true?
Yes, definitely. So I used to paint flowers and plants. It kind of started out with paintings of houseplants, but then they kind of gradually got more and more complex, and they were like gardens or landscapes. But a big part of them was lots of little details of mm-hmm. plants. And I just got to this point where I was like, I just really felt ready to change my work. I wanted there to be less stuff in the paintings, I think, or I don't know if I felt that at the time exactly. I also kind of wanted to get away from direct observation. Mm-hmm. This work really represented kind of stepping away from a kind of facility, like an ability to, depict something in like a realistic way. Cause in the old paintings before, like there were kind of like carefully observed depictions of plants and flowers. And, but in the background, there were always these kind of bright skies, like colorful skies and clouds and suns. And so basically I kind of just zoomed in on those skies. And then also I had been doing, I'd been painting the water a little bit after a couple trips to Florida. So this water imagery had kind of been in the paintings for a while, and And I remember I had this one painting where it was like a beach and water. And there was, I kept trying to put things in it, like in front of the beach and the water. Like, I'll try this plant. I'll try that plant. I'll try this one. Maybe it'll be three. Maybe it'll be five. And I kept like painting them out. And then I finally realized like, oh, it should just be nothing. Like, it should just be the beach and the water and the sun. And there were a couple of plants in the foreground, but that was a big transition, that painting. And it helped me realize like, oh, things really can have a lot less in them. And that actually feels good to me.
Yeah. I was going to ask about that too, sort of that transition kind of moving from more land and plant-based visuals of nature. You know, earlier on you had like more mountains and forest type scenes, and then you know, moving to the sea as sort of this like place for kind of grounding yourself in perspective and as the point of focus for your paintings. Do you want to talk anymore just about sort of the thematic like relationship to why you're painting the sea and like what it is about that kind of, you know, is holding you captivated right now, I guess. I mean, you're making a lot of paintings about, you know, the ocean.
Right, right. Yeah. I mean, I think what I like about the water is that it is, it can like be a lot of different shapes, and it can be painted in different ways, and it can be kind of any color. So there's this idea of the water reflecting the sky, and I always try to make the color kind of consistent from the sky to the water. Like, there isn't usually a big contrast between the sky and the water. And really the way that I compose the paintings, I really start with the sky. Like, the first idea is always the sky, or not always, but like really 95% of the time, it's all about the sky. And then the water is, kind of a support to that, like composition. And I mean, I definitely have painted, like I've made one painting with dunes a few years ago, and I just made this one little study, and with the color, the water actually looks more like mountains or sand or something. And I was like, oh, maybe I should try that. Like, maybe I should try making a painting of sand or something. So I think there are, like, I like that water could sort of reflect the sky, and it could be any color. I think in truth, like, I am somewhat limited with what kinds of colors I can paint to have it still feel like water, or I don't know, I'm still kind of pushing that and exploring that. But yeah, I think water, and then, you know, there are different ways, like I paint it different ways. Sometimes the waves are sort of pointy, and sometimes they're more smooth, and sometimes there's like a wave like reaching up and curling over, and sometimes there's kind of like a series of waves that curl over. So I like you know, having that kind of limited imagery and then just playing within that a lot. Like, I've always found that if I just sort of pick a particular subject matter and then just do variations on it, like again and again and again, like that's a nice way for me of just like eliminating some choices and just making it really, like really focused and being able to just move from one painting to the next, without having to reinvent the wheel every time.
Do you think that strategy was influenced by becoming a mother at all?
No, I was doing that. I know I started doing that in college. I did a series of portraits, and because I remember having that thought like, oh, what do I paint this time? And I remember like talking to, maybe it was a professor or something, about that, just be like, oh, like, what do I paint? Like, how, you know, I really want to paint, but like, what do I paint this time? Like, I painted that last time. And then at some, I don't know if somebody told me to, or I just figured it out. I was like, oh, I'll just do portraits. I'll just do portraits of everyone I know. They'll all be like, you know, the same kind of pose, the same kind of composition, like very frontal, and it just set me free, and it just like allowed me, cause I just like need to make stuff. Like, it just, you know, I just need to have like one thing after another to make, to like feel good. So I started doing it then and kind of have always worked that way. And now I'll like come up with the idea for the next painting, like maybe halfway to two thirds of the way through whatever I'm working on. I'll kind of get to this point when it gets to where it's like just about finishing something, and I'll be like, okay, I got to think of the next thing that I'm kind of excited about. And I'll go back and finish it later.
That makes a lot of sense. Okay. And you work primarily in acrylic, right?
Yes. Yeah. In acrylic.
And what about scale or size? Like a lot of your paintings are more like a portrait size. Are they, you know, really large? Are they smaller?
Well, so for the show that's up now at Speroni Westwater, I did scale up to, I guess they're 39 inches wide and 48 inches tall.
So
that's kind of the main size I'm working right now. But for the last show I had, which was an online show with Tamar Grané in March, they were smaller. They were like 16 by 20 to 24 by 30. Actually, it's 20 by 16 to 30 by 24 because they're all verticals.
Okay.
So I am scaling them up kind of as there's more demand for them, really. Mm-hmm. I think, when I first moved to New York, I was making big paintings in grad school, and that was sort of, you know, it's like, well, if you're ambitious, you're going to make big paintings. But when I got to New York, I had to throw out a bunch of those big paintings or throw out sculptures, and was living in small spaces and didn't necessarily have an outside studio. And so I really scaled. And also I was just didn't really know what I was doing and was figuring stuff out and working through imagery kind of quickly for a lot of years. So I was painting small. And then also just with limited time, between like day job and parenting, it was easier to kind of bring something to completion if it was small.
Right.
But now that's changing. And I am in the studio a lot more and have always wanted to make big stuff. I have done some bigger stuff like along the way. I'm doing it a lot more now.
Yeah, it's interesting. We were just having this conversation in a professional practices class that I co-teach, and we were talking about kind of like how as an artist, you kind of have this romanticization of like, I'm just led by the work and whatever, you know, I feel I need to make is kind of what comes out. And then I think we kind of hold that like on this pedestal, but then there's this other, you know, way to go about thinking about your studio practice. That's like, no, I literally only have these resources. I only have this space. I only have like this sort of structure within which to make work that kind of fits into my lifestyle right now. And sort of, you know, thinking about things a little more practically. And if you don't, you know, it's nice to hear how you're like changing your practice based on the demand and that you do have like more space now for creating larger because you are working on these larger shows, but you know, it's just not practical for a lot of people. And instead of like feeling bad about that, like kind of using that as an asset, like you're making intentional choices about, you know, the work and what practically can fit into your life without, you know, creating waste or creating scenarios where then you're like stressed out about getting storage or stuff.
Right. Yeah. So. Yeah. No, I hate having too much stuff. And, I don't like having too much stuff, and I don't like having like a lot of mediocre work around or like big mediocre work. Like I think in my 20s, I was just like, I'm going to just make like small, really beautiful, like precise, you know, things that have like a lot of love in them. Like that to me was something that I wanted to keep around rather than something that was big and experimental or like big for the sake of, of like posturing or something about like, I don't know, just for a long time, there wasn't any reason mm-hmm. for them to be big. And then I think when it, you know, there got to be a point where it was like, okay, this needs to be bigger. Actually, mm-hmm. I want the impact that you get from a bigger piece. But that was more like after I had really honed in on painting plants and painting landscapes, and where I was really clear on like, okay, this is really exciting. This is something I really want to explore. And for a lot of years before that, I was sort of bouncing between portraits and still lives and, yeah.
Awesome.
I'm thrilled to partner with our new sponsor, Cozy, to tell you more about this incredible app. Cozy is an app that specializes in keeping busy families organized. It's an app designed for multiple users to help you and your spouse, partner, or caretakers juggle school schedules, practices, meetings, doctor's appointments, and more. Cozy tracks everyone's schedules and events in one place with a shared color-coded calendar. A feature I love is the app reminds others about your family's events so that you don't have to be the one who does that. It's easy to get started. You can even pull in events from your family's existing personal work and school calendars. You can have Cozy send everyone in your family a weekly or a daily email that shares your agenda. And I personally love the meal planning section. You can create a shared grocery list that lets the whole family add items in real time. So you'll never find yourself at the store without the list. Not that that's happened to you, but it's happened with me before. That list is always on your phone and it's up to date. If you need help figuring out dinner, there's even a place to store recipes and plan meals ahead. The best part? Cozy is free. Just download Cozy, C-O-Z-I, the family organizer app from your app store. That's Cozy, C-O-Z-I, and get the free app today. Visit your phone's App Store or Google Play to download Cozy today. Start feeling more organized and keep your family communication simple this season. Thank you so much, Cozy, for sponsoring the Artist Mother podcast.
Okay, Amy, we're going to come back to this idea of prepping for a solo show, but I wanted to ask you a couple other questions first. I'm curious to know if you've had models in your life who were artist parents and, you know, like kind of living in California or going to school in California and being on the West Coast and then kind of moving to New York. I'm just wondering, you know, those are kind of really big art-centric cities that maybe have less, you know, the lifestyles are a little more focused on careers a lot of the time rather than kind of personal life choices and aspirations. So curious to hear about the models maybe that you have had or lack of models that you've had in your life.
Yeah. I mean, in terms of being an artist, I think I kind of went through school without a ton of, I mean, my kind of mentor in undergrad was my professor, Dave Hollowell, at UC Davis and, in Davis, California. And, he did have four kids, one of whom is now one of my good friends, Loie Hollowell. But yeah, so he did have four kids, but I think it's a pretty important distinction, like whether it is a woman, mm-hmm. you know, with kids who is an artist. My professors at Davis, there were a couple women who had kids, and there was one, Robin Hill, who gave me a lot of great career advice and told me to go to Brandeis for a post-bac after Davis, which I did. And she was coming from New York. Like she, I remember going to her job talk and then, you know, she started teaching at Davis while I was there. And she had two kids. And she also, I think she must have talked about, like, I don't know, being a woman in the art world. I don't really specifically remember that, but I do feel like she, even though I didn't actually take any classes with her because she taught sculpture and I was, you know, pretty focused on painting. She was a, I would say, a little bit of at least an example of an artist who's a woman who's very professionally oriented and but also has two kids.
And did you ever see, you know, evidence of artists' mothers or artists' parents? Like, was it more just you kind of knew they had kids, or did you ever like see, you know, their families in certain situations?
I probably saw, because her husband came and taught at Davis too. So I think I probably saw them at parties at Dave Hollowell's house. He had these big parties, and I think I probably saw Robin and Tom and their kids there. But I just wasn't, you know, like I wasn't real focused on wanting to have kids, and I wasn't, and I think I, you know, bought this idea for a while that I think it's really not like people don't talk about this and people don't say this anymore, or I don't know, certainly they don't say it to me, but I think I had the idea for a while that it was a lot harder to be a successful artist if you were a woman or sorry, if you were a woman and you chose to have kids. So, so I was really worried about that and worried that it would make it harder for me to pursue my career as an artist. But I mean, I basically just thought I would put it off for a while. And, yeah. So yeah, I mean, and I think I had a moment where I was like, oh, maybe I won't have kids. Like, I'm not sure I want to have kids because really, because, you know, once I got to New York, I always had to have jobs. And I just figured, okay, so I've got a job and then I've got an art career, and like having kids is another, another expensive unpaid occupation, you know, along with being an artist. And I just thought like, this is, it might be too hard. Yeah. So I wasn't sure I wanted to have kids, but my, you know, now husband, then boyfriend, was really clear on that he wanted kids, and also I think he was somebody who like really supported me as an artist, and like there was always a lot of room in our relationship for my focus on art, and I mean he is also an artist and very focused on art, and we did a lot of cool projects together, like putting on shows and going, we went to Japan together to teach art at Kobe University, Japan. So yeah, so that, you know, I think once I had the right person, I think it became clear to me. And I also did have, you know, a happy childhood and a great relationship with my mom, especially. And yeah, I think I realized at a certain point, like that it wasn't something I wanted to give up because also by that time, by, you know, age 30 or so, I realized like, it's not so easy to kind of achieve the kind of commercial success I had hoped for.
Right.
And I thought, you know, there's no guarantee on that. Whether or not I have kids. So I don't want to pass up on having kids, which is, you know, I knew would just be a really rewarding, like rich experience. I didn't want to pass up on that for like an art career that might never really turn into the thing I had always wanted it to be.
Right. Where you kind of have less control over the success or not success or the timeline, I guess, of your career. Yeah, that's interesting to think about. Amy, speaking of like kind of partner and other jobs and stuff, just wondering practically if, you know, are you a full-time artist or is there another job that you currently have? And you could talk a little bit about the trajectory of kind of some of the jobs that you've had that have sustained your art career?
Sure. I am a full-time artist now, but that has really happened this year, like in 2021. I worked as a bookkeeper for the last 7 years or so. Since I moved to New York, I was always very focused on working part-time. Mm-hmm. And I found jobs that allowed me to do that. So when I first got here, I did catering, and then I started doing prop stylist assisting, so working on photo shoots. Mm. And then I got into bookkeeping, but it's always, my goal was always to work around 3 days a week or so, and then mm-hmm. have the rest of the time in the studio. Once I have kids, that became more complicated. I have sold my work kind of all along, like here and there. I think really early on, the prices were so low that it didn't make much difference. But I mean, mm-hmm. pretty early on, it was always it contributed to my income, but it mm-hmm. wasn't the majority of it. And then this year that has changed, and now I'm full time in the studio.
Awesome. And has that change come because there's been more of an increase in sales and just availability for you to kind of financially make that work? Or was it more affected by like childcare and, because your youngest is 3 now. So I imagine there's probably a preschool situation maybe happening for you.
Yeah. And it's because of sales, really.
Awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's great. Okay. And so connected to that, tell me about your studio space. I think you have a studio in your home, maybe, but I'm curious to know, like, if that has changed over time. Did you have one outside of your home and you moved it home because of, becoming a parent, or vice versa? Kind of interested to hear a little bit about that transition.
Yeah. So I have mostly had live workspaces since I got to New York. There was 1 year when I had an outside studio. When I very first moved to New York, I had a residency. So I had an outside studio for like 6 months. I think pretty quick I realized that it was a lot easier for me to make work when my studio was somewhere in the space that I lived. Mm-hmm. Just building it around, on days that I worked, if I didn't necessarily want to go out to the studio and mm-hmm. be there until like 10 or 11 at night. But if it was in my, in my apartment or in my loft, then it was a lot easier to just like, I'm going to, I've got a couple hours before I go to bed. Like I'll just paint for a couple hours. Mm-hmm. I lived in this loft in Bushwick, that was like kind of a quintessential, like old factory building. I had like a lofted bed, and the studio below. So I lived there for a couple of years, and then, Kevin and I moved to a different loft, and we also made that like a live workspace. And then we had Fiona, my older daughter was born while we lived there. And it became, really valuable to have the live workspace with a baby, because at that point I would just paint when she napped, or basically just when she was sleeping. So there were definitely periods after both of my kids were born when I didn't pay for childcare for studio time. Like my only studio time, so I would pay somebody to go to my job, like my bookkeeping job. But in order to paint, I would just paint when they napped or like before they woke up in the morning. So really until, but then there were also periods like after Fiona was born, but before Margo was born, where I was selling more work. And so I did have studio time where, Fiona was at daycare. Mm-hmm. So it's always kind of, I've adjusted it depending on, you know, how we were doing financially, like how much money I was making at selling the paintings or, but yeah, that's, but having the studio in my house or, I mean, then we moved to Queens and got a single family house. And now I'm mostly working in the basement, although there is a, like a little kind of front room studio as you walk into the house.
Okay.
That was my main studio. But as I've made the work bigger, I've kind of like worked on the basement. We've, you know, been working on the basement and put up walls down here. So this is the studio now. And then we're actually in the process of renovating the garage and turning that into a studio. So
nice. Then we're in the process of doing that too.
Oh, nice. Nice. Yeah. Cool.
Yeah. It's, we've tackled bigger projects. So it's, but it's still one of those that like, there's, you know, there are steps to it that take time.
Yes. It does take a while.
Yes. Awesome, Amy. Thanks so much for sharing about that transition. Okay, so let's talk about the kind of structure, the parameters of building up to a big solo show. First, maybe you could tell me when was your first big solo show, and you know, what are kind of some memorable solo shows that you've had, sort of since you've been working consistently on your career? I don't know how many you've had. You could talk about the number.
Yeah, I was thinking about this. I mean, I actually had my first show at a gallery, at this gallery in Davis, John Natsoulis Gallery. So that was actually like right after I graduated from college. And I was
from undergrad?
Yeah, yeah. I think he saw my work at, I don't know, somewhere in this, or no, I had it actually. I mean, I was just always trying to show my work like any way I could. So I think I had like a show at a coffee shop in town, and then he saw it, and then he invited me to do the show at his gallery. Mm. So that, but I was like so young and just like didn't really, honestly, like I think he just kept all the work and like didn't pay me for it. Or I mean, like I, you know, at that point in my life, I would just make things and they ended up wherever. And right. I, you know, like, I didn't get them back. And
yes, not keeping good inventory. You got to do
right.
it.
Right. Because in a way, like I didn't care. Like I mean, I was thinking about it today and I was remembering a couple of those paintings. I was like, oh, you know, I kind of wish I had that painting.
Yeah.
But yeah, I didn't, so that was probably the very first one. But then after I got to New York, I would say my first show was at Storefront Gallery in Bushwick, which was, run by my friend, Jason Andrew. And that was like 2000, maybe 2010 or 11, maybe 10. I'm not totally sure.
Okay.
And then my first, and then there was like one in Salt Lake City. And then in 2016, I had my first show at Morgan Lehman Gallery. And that was a big deal because that mm-hmm. was, I mean, it was a commercial gallery, but it was a little bit more of like an artist run space. Mm-hmm. And Morgan Lehman was like really like a real legit mm-hmm. commercial gallery. And so that was a big deal, that show. I mean, it was in their project space, so it wasn't like the whole gallery.
Right.
But that was very exciting. And then later that year, I had the show at Monureau in St. Augustine. She is back in New York now, and I met her in New York originally, but her gallery was in Florida for a couple of years.
Okay.
So those were big shows. And then in 2018, I had another solo show with Morgan Lehman, and that was really the main gallery space.
Okay. So it sounds like every couple, you know, every 2 to 4 years respectively, you have, or you try to have, you know, a decent size solo show.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there were also like kind of more, it's possible I've forgotten some things.
Yeah.
Along the way too, or like there were, you know, there was like this, there've been other little things here and there too, but yeah, those were kind of the most important. And then of course the one that's up now, Whisperoni, is a big deal for me.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So tell me about the one that's up now, and, you know, can you talk a little bit more about like some of the themes and ideas that you're exploring in that show? And then maybe just practically, like, how many paintings are in that show? Like, how big is the space? And yeah, anything else you want to share about it?
Yeah, I don't actually know the square footage. It might be like, I don't think it's crazy huge, but it's maybe like 600 or 800 square feet.
Okay.
So they offered me that show in March, and with your questions that you sent me, you were sort of asking about like the process of preparing for a solo show. And I think sometimes when I'm offered a solo show, like there isn't a whole lot. It's more like, oh, do you want to do a show? Like, we've got a spot like next month or in 2 months, like, and I'll be like, oh, cool. Yeah. I've got a bunch of work. Like, let's do it.
Yeah.
So it wasn't exactly that I was preparing for a solo show. Like with this one, I did know about the show and
right.
Really, I had like one or two paintings made, but I didn't really have available work. So I had to, it was all new work that I was making. With a real like pretty close deadline. But it wasn't like the work that I had been making up to that point, like for the show. Oh, I'm sorry. I missed one that is super important, which was my online show with Tamor Grane in March of this year.
Okay.
Because that really actually was a big turning point. It was an online show, but, yeah, now he's representing me as well as Speroni. But anyway, yeah, that was also a big deal. But yeah, with that one.
So that one kind of closed, like you had that one up in March and then you got invited to do an additional one and you were like, okay, I guess.
Yeah.
You kind of did this big push to the Tamor Grane one and then you got another one like kind of right after and kind of, was that overwhelming?
Yes. The Tamor one was not a big push. It was more just like, oh, I'm really excited about making these seascapes. Like, this is going really well. Like, this is really fun. And I was just making them and making them and making them. And there were actually like a couple other shows that might have happened and they got canceled because of the pandemic. And so with Tamor, I really had like twice as much work as I needed for that show. But you know, that show went well. And then the Speroni people like came to see that work, like, because it was an online show, like I had it all in my studio. So they came and looked at that work and then, offered me the show in the gallery in September.
Okay.
But yeah, I had to make all new work. And then at that point I was like, okay, I got to scale up. Like I really, you know, it's a big, like beautiful space, mm-hmm. big like tall ceilings. I really want to make, like some bigger paintings. And so, so I went to the gallery and I, you know, looked at the space and
had they given you sort of, you know, oh, we really like your seascapes, or like, did they give you kind of any sort of direction?
No, they asked me like, so what are you thinking about doing next? And I was like, more of these, but bigger. They definitely didn't like try to steer me in one way mm-hmm. or the other, but also I think that's what they wanted. Like they didn't want me to like go back to the work I was making a couple years ago.
Right.
I think they're really used to working with artists and kind of not getting in the way of the, you know, the kind of creative process. But I definitely did want to scale up. I mean, Angela Westwater did say to me, like, you know, you could make a bunch of small paintings. Like we've had shows in that space that were a lot of small works and they looked beautiful. And so I think I could, like the scaling up idea was really more mine. But it was also because like those constraints that I, you know, we talked about earlier had kind of been lifted. Like I had more time, like the work was like selling and, you know, there was no storage problem. And I, yeah, I really was excited about seeing this imagery big too. Mm-hmm. So yeah, when I set out to do it, I kind of thought like, okay, I'll make like 3 big ones and like 4 medium ones and like 4 small ones. And I, had kind of a, like a SketchUp model, like a rendering of the space. So I was sort of like thinking about like how to kind of lay them all out in the space and,
kind of based on size and scale and then.
Yeah. To just kind of figure out like how many I needed.
Right.
And like how many of each size. And, you know, back when I did the Monuro show, she kind of asked me to make them all the same size. And, there is something about having a show where all the work is the same size and the same orientation that is really like visually cohesive in a nice way.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew I didn't want, and I've had shows where it was a bigger variety of like, some are really small, some are really big, some a bunch are horizontal, a bunch are vertical. And I've felt like the shows where there's like kind of one size that you see a lot of, there is a certain kind of like visual, like gravity to that. That's really nice. So I was, but then I was also like, kind of wasn't sure how it would go scaling up to this bigger size and, was nervous about, you know, I didn't necessarily want to set myself a goal of making like all big paintings for that show. And then also just like, it's, you know, I don't know. It's nice to make some small ones too. Like,
well, and practically like for a buyer, you know, like I think it's nice to have some variety in terms of price points if you're wanting to sell the work, you know?
Yeah, sure. Definitely. Yeah. And with the online show with Haymore, like really none of that was an issue. Like there was no issue of cohesiveness because it was online and like, you know, the size of the image on the page could be whatever. So yeah. So, but then once I got going on the big paintings for the Speroni show, the first couple were hard, but then I kind of,
are they what you tackled first?
Well, I already had a medium sized one that I had just started.
Okay.
Just cause I'm always, you know, I'm always working on something.
Mm-hmm.
And, then, yeah, no. And then they offered me the show. I was like, okay, I gotta do some big ones. And there, it was, you know, an adjustment going, moving to that size. I think I wanted to scale up anyway, just because, you know, there was more interest all of a sudden. And, but yeah, once, so it took me a couple to get comfortable with the larger size, but then once I did, I was like, oh, this is fine. Like I feel this is a fine size. It's not too big and it has a really nice presence on the wall. And then I was like, okay, actually I'm going to do 6 big ones. And, so what's in the show is 6 big ones, 2 medium and 2 small.
Oh, cool.
And I ended up doing a few like really small, ones that we didn't even hang.
Yeah. I was going to ask that too, if you kind of planned to make more work than was needed in the show in case, you know, there was like a selection process that they wanted to be able to say, you know, okay, let's go with these ones and not these ones or whatever.
Yeah, I ended up making more than I needed and they were sort of like, oh, you can hang these small ones like as you first come in. And I ended up feeling like, no, that was too much. I'm really wary of like overhanging a show. Cause I feel like I've been to shows before where you're like, you know, sometimes it's just really nice to have a kind of a spare, like simple, and this show, I would not call it spare. But yeah, hanging those 3 additional little ones would have been too much, but you know, I kind of finished, with a little time to spare and I was like, I'll just like make some little ones that take me like a day to make, or like a 2 days to make and, just to make sure there's enough and really I didn't even need those.
Hi, I'm Mindy Widock with the Artist Mother team. I wanted to take a moment to share about our Artist Mother Network. you have listened to the podcast and maybe follow along on Instagram, finding support and validation as an artist's mother on these platforms. We have a space that offers a more personal experience in the artist's mother community. Come join our Artist's Mother Network, a place where more tangible friendships are created and resources for you as an artist and a mother are abundant. On the network, you will find groups to support your interests, like the Single Mothers Group. Through these subsets, I have personally found forever friends and strength in the wisdom and support of other women. Our network offers free artist talks on so many different topics. Jody Hayes recently gave us a tour of her studio and how she keeps her art life organized. We also have one workshop by an artist a month, offered to you for free with your membership. Tara Carpenter Estrada just walked our members through a trace monotype printing workshop that was so fun. All of our workshops and artist talks are recorded and saved on the network, so you can access them if you aren't able to attend live. I also co-host the morning show with Kaylin Butine. We start Monday mornings in community with you talking about topics deeply relatable in our artist mother identities. We have recently discussed how we can be fearless in our studios, what bravery looks like as an artist, and have shared in vulnerability and what makes us afraid. These morning shows are the best way to start the week. Please don't miss out on this opportunity to connect with us on a deeper level. Our network offers an affordable membership of $11 a month or $121 a year, and your first 2 months are free. This gives you access to our artist talks, workshops, morning show, exhibition opportunities, a growing resource library for artist mothers, and many support groups with other network members based on location and interests. The network also provides you the opportunity to take part in our leadership training so that you may become an artist mother community host in your own geographical area. The network has been such a wonderful source of friendship, community, and artist resources. I am so proud to be part of this artist mother world and am grateful I get to share it with you. I look forward to getting to know your magical self. I will see you on the network. You can find all the information you need to join on our website at artistmotherpodcast.com.
So what do you think is kind of the biggest challenge about preparing for a big solo show? Like, do you naturally sort of like the constraints of, okay, I'm going to make kind of like working within a system or formula, like I'm going to make 6 large ones and 3 medium ones? Or do you feel kind of frustrated and limited sort of within that system and it feels like something you have to push through? Kind of curious to hear sort of emotionally how that is processed for you.
This didn't feel limiting at all. This, I think, was a good, it was more like, okay, I've got a great opportunity. I've got the last show did well, so I can do less bookkeeping and spend more time in the studio. So it was more like, okay, this is my chance to really increase the ambition for this body of work. And that was really exciting and felt really good. In an ideal world, I guess maybe I would have had a little more time to make the show. But I don't know. I guess it would have been nice to have a little more time just because it was over the summer, and it would have been nice to like take a little more time off to go on vacation and stuff.
balance.
I think that was hard. Like, just, I was really excited about the opportunity and I worked really hard and I didn't rest a lot and I was kind of stressed out and not sleeping well. So I think that aspect of it was hard for sure. It was also like a great opportunity and I wanted to make the most of it.
Yeah.
And, now I'm just kind of still working out like how to balance, being ambitious in the studio and saying yes to exciting opportunities, but also like, I need to rest. I need to take days off and I need to like relax with my family some of the time and just not be like a crazy workaholic. Still working on that.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a constant, you never really kind of find the perfect answer to that. But I do think part of it does come with having to say no to things, like, or kind of being able to gauge like a bigger picture. Like maybe, you know, you knew in March you could say yes to this because maybe you were going to have like more flexibility in time because it was going to be summer. And then, you know, kind of telling yourself like, okay, this winter I'm going to, you know, relax a little bit more or whatever. Like kind of trusting that you can balance it in the bigger picture for me is kind of how I have to do things. But then when it actually gets to the winter and, you know, another opportunity comes my way or whatever, I do have to, you know, kind of really do that gut check where it's like, okay, am I going to say no to this, or can we negotiate so there's like a little more flexibility maybe or something? It's hard.
Yeah. Right. Or do you figure out a way to like scale up your like hire an assistant or something?
Like, right. Yeah. Like take time away from something else so you can put time over there in the studio or whatever it is.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think that's really more what I've been, you know, like I hired somebody to pick up my kids and like, you know, yeah, things like, or like hiring a cleaner or something.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Things like that to sort of, because that is really the biggest impediment to studio time at this point is just like, okay, some classmate, like a classmate of one of my daughters got COVID. So their class is shutting down for, you know, a week and a half. And I mean, my husband will take time off too, but, you know, yeah, that kind of thing can really throw a wrench in, my production schedule, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So yeah, it can be challenging for sure.
What about just working towards a show when the show kind of is complete? Do you feel like it usually meets your expectations? Are you good at sort of like resting and celebrating and just saying like, I've done my best, like it's out there, it is what it is, and I'm just gonna find like joy in that? Or are you more kind of, I wish I had done this, or I could have done that, or I forgot to bring in more pink in this one. Like kind of, how do you manage sort of the, you know, the high and then maybe the letdown sort of emotionally working towards a solo show and completing it?
Yeah. So I think a solo show is always like an opportunity to see the work through a different lens, or, you know, taking the work out of your studio and putting it on the gallery wall and seeing it like in a big white box is, it's a really useful thing to see your work in that way. And, it just helps you kind of see it a little more clearly. And I think there have been times when I drew conclusions from that, I want to explore, like even with this show, I actually just had an album on my phone where I had all the paintings. It was like Speroni show. And so I would look at that album and just like looking at the color all together like that.
Mm-hmm.
Like there was a moment, like, you know, a month or two before the show where I did that. And I was like, oh wow. Like there, I could see certain patterns with the color, like certain colors I was using a lot. And then it gave me some inspiration to be like, okay, I haven't made any orange paintings. Like, let me just try to make, like, there's so much blue and pink. Like, what if I make an orange painting or, you know, green painting or, so I think it can be useful for that. I mean, the way I felt about this particular show, I think was just very positive. I think actually when you're just working on it, I mean, in my experience, like being given a date for a show, you know, however many months out in which you can make all that work preparing for that show, I think makes a stronger show than, hey, we've got a spot open in a couple months. Like, do you want to do a show? And like, okay, I've got a bunch of work around here. Like, yeah, I guess I've got enough work for a show, but it's like kind of a few different bodies of work. And like, maybe the better ones have already sold. Like, you know, so that kind of show I think is not quite as like, I don't feel as good about that kind of a show.
Right.
That's sort of the, you know, like, oh, we've got a slot open. Like, do you right. have some support? You know, like
throw it together. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that is like emotionally, like a little bit of a letdown compared to, like what I did with this show, which was really like looking at the space, looking at a 3D model of the space, thinking about how many pieces the space needed and, you know, planning to scale up and planning to make, you know, things in, you know, a kind of a limited number of sizes. You know, so I felt really good about this one, like just seeing it all up in the space. And, I mean, yeah, it was a great moment. You know, felt really positive. And I, you know, I think when I was younger too, I've had that experience of like working towards a show and then you put up the show and then there's a little bit of a letdown in terms of like, oh, maybe it doesn't sell or, I don't know. I think I've had that feeling before of like, or maybe nobody writes anything about it. You know, that can be a letdown. But I think over the years, like I've kind of adjusted my expectations. I mean, it's also just like different spaces are going to offer you different kinds of opportunities.
Yeah.
And also like people might respond to one body of work more than another. So yeah, I mean, I think my emotions kind of will just respond to whatever is happening with that. And, or like, you know, with the economy and like the art market and like, oh wait, nobody wants to buy anything because of whatever's happening politically or, you know, things can really, yeah, it's a crapshoot. So definitely sometimes there's been a letdown. Like if a show didn't do well, I've felt a letdown afterwards. Yeah, I mean, this one was very positive. And it felt,
yeah. And I think just kind of like you shared, having the space to be a little more intentional and, you know, planned out in what you want to do, maybe is an extra boost of confidence too, because you know you're like really thinking through all aspects and like putting the effort in as much as you can. So
yeah, but it's always a collaboration, and like whatever space you're working with, like sometimes that's the way to get your foot in a door at like a, you know, a better gallery is like, you know, like they've got a spot and they offer it to you and you're like, okay, like, yeah, all right, I've got some work. And because sometimes that's the opportunity you get.
Right. Well, and very early on, I interviewed Allison Ramis, and she basically said that she is always working towards a solo show in her studio, whether she has one on the calendar or not. And just because that kind of the parameter of, okay, I'm going to kind of come up with this intentional plan. You know, maybe you don't know obviously what space the work could or would go in. But just kind of thinking through like, what is a body of work? What do I want this body of work to do or say? And, you know, what scale, like what kind of limitations am I putting on it? And then just like making it and, you know, kind of figuring it out and learning along the way rather than going from like one piece and maybe there's not as much like connection. It was interesting to kind of hear her think about that and to just the like what that says, you know, about you as an artist, to just say, you know what, I don't care that I don't have one on the show, I'm gonna work like I have one or one on the calendar, I'm gonna work like I have one on the calendar regardless, and just kind of trust that, you know, an opportunity will come along.
You do work differently. I think when I started this imagery, like it was kind of coming off of like Margot being born and there really being a lull in, you know, opportunities and I felt that there was a lot of doubt when I first started making the seascapes, like, oh, are people going to like these? They're so different from what I was making before. Is anybody going to buy them? And I just really wasn't sure how they would be received. So I think I started them smaller, but I was still like excited about making them. And then as I just think it's, for me, it is always kind of an interaction with my audience and what kind of response I'm getting. And, And then as I started to get more opportunities, I was like, okay, I'm going to like scale them up a little bit. And yeah, I think that kind of feedback has always been important for me.
Yeah. What about, you know, you've already kind of gave some practical things to think about for somebody preparing for a solo show, but I'm just wondering if you have any like specific advice.
Oh, for preparing for a solo show.
Yeah. Maybe somebody who's never done it or, you know, who it hasn't gone well, like what are kind of some tips or advice you could offer?
Well, I mean, you know, like in my experience, you just don't always have control over things like how much lead time you're given, or like the space, you know, there might be limitations with the space, you know, but in terms of things you can control, you know, obviously like going to the space and checking it out and thinking about it, thinking about like what size you might make things. I find that that kind of parameter, like, oh, I'm going to make like 3 big ones, 4 medium ones, 4 small ones. Like it's fine to change that halfway through, but it was nice to just sort of have that as a, like a goal for myself. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, if you can get like a 3D modeling, rendering or something, or like, I've seen people like make little foam core, models of the gallery. You know, I don't think that's necessary for every, show. Like if you've got a bunch of work, you don't need to do that. But if you've got like kind of a limited time and you're stressed about making enough work, then I think that is really useful. Mm-hmm. To figure out like, okay, all I really need is like 8 paintings. And then you can just take a little bit of the pressure off of yourself. That was actually something that Loie kind of told me as I was preparing for this show. And I was like, kind of anxious about whether or not I'd make enough work. She was like, okay, you make a model of the space, figure out what is the minimal hang, like what's the smallest number of paintings you can hang up or, you know, present and have it look good in the space. And then that's your goal. And if you have more than that, great. But, you know, it takes some of the stress off because the stress and the anxiety can, you know, stymie your process.
Right.
So, you know, that's obviously, you don't want that to happen. So if you can find a way to take the anxiety off by kind of almost like creating a low bar in terms of the number of paintings.
Right.
And then, I mean, what happened for me too with this show is I ended up really producing more than I thought I would initially.
Mm. Awesome. Thanks so much, Amy. I love hearing sort of about this show and can't wait to show images of it. Okay, let's close with our final 5. These are just kind of fun questions for us to get to know you a little bit better. So can you tell me who is your biggest art crush?
Oh, or my biggest art crush. I mean, David Hockney, I really love his work. And yeah, I saw his show at the Met and there's some pretty incredible projects. And also like the scale and the ambition of some of his work is really amazing.
Mm. Cool. Okay. What is your favorite place to travel or a dream trip that you'd like to go on?
Oh man. Favorite place to travel. I mean, I just always like to go back to Oregon to visit my family.
Mm.
But
are they still outside Portland?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and then also we go to the Oregon coast, like my grandparents lived out there. So it's always nice to go there.
Okay. What is your favorite meal?
Oh, my favorite meal. So my husband makes, Utica greens. He's from Utica, New York, and it's like, it's escarole and like, I don't know, there's like spicy peppers and like, I don't know, some kind of meat in it and cheese and breadcrumbs and.
Awesome. Okay, Amy. And finally, I like to offer you a space to give a shout out to somebody who supports you and your work that you want to thank.
So my husband, for sure, my husband, Kevin Curran, who's also an artist, and my mom, I would say they've just always been really, really supportive of me and huge, very, very important people in my life and career.
And where can people find you? What's your website, Instagram, any other place you want them to look to check out your work?
I definitely keep Instagram the most updated, and I'm at Amy P. Lincoln, and my website, I don't update my website as much, but there's definitely a bunch of stuff on there too. And that's amylincoln.com. And I'm represented by Speroni Westwater and also Tamor Grane. So they've both got some images on their websites as well.
Awesome. Amy, thanks for having this conversation with me.
Yeah, thanks, Kaylin. Great to talk to you.
The Artist Mother podcast is curated and produced by Kaylin Butine. Music by Josh Middleton. Editing and mixing by John M. Butine. Please visit www.artistmotherpodcast.com for episode notes and to find out how you can further support this podcast.